It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, he's not lying. We are living that dream and taking you with us. Good morning. It's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. Phone number to join us today is 802-655-6672. That's 802-655-6672. Or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line at the same number, 655-6672. Austin Danforth from the Free Press back in here today.
Yo.
Like we're together 2-3 weeks in a row.
This is, don't break the streak.
It is pretty fun here.
I know, it is.
You're looking sharp today. Aaron Wells, good to see you, my man. Good job remembering that Zion was the number one pick. How can you not remember Zion Williamson is the number one pick? Everybody knew he was going to be the number one pick. People couldn't believe he wasn't going to be the number one pick. It's almost as crazy as Derek Jeter not being getting every vote to be in the Hall of Fame.
We'll get into that later.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, you know, I just had this moment where I was like, I didn't fact check that this morning. I could be wrong. I could be remembering wrong.
Well, I mean, like,
it was a while ago.
It did take, that was, what, 9 months ago, 8 months ago?
And he's barely played since, so you don't really think about it.
He's played two games since June.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, Ja Morant was sort of the talk of the draft last year, really, and he's had a really Ja Morant-like start to the season, so... You get a pass from it. You get a hall pass today.
Oh yeah, it's fine. And I'll tell you, have you seen Zion play so far? He's right back at it. I mean, this kid is an unbelievable
player.
Dude,
that block last night,
unbelievable.
Woo!
And he looks like he's a bit out of shape to me. You know, he looks like he's a little. That's why I love Zion so much, because he looks like, you know, just some guy playing in the Y League. You know what I mean?
He looks like Charles Barkley with a couple extra inches in every direction.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, part of his injury rehab was trying to train him to run differently. So I'm sure he's like kind of. Looks like he's a little bit funky out there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, listen, it's good to have him back, and the NBA needs him. I mean, he's the only reason I'm turning the NBA on right now, to be honest with you. I mean, with all the problems that I believe the NBA has, Zion Williamson is a reason to turn on the TV to watch them.
Well, a 6'8", 280-pound guy who can put up 22 points in 18 minutes is a fun thing to watch.
That was why, like, that heater he got on in the fourth quarter was something else. And
some player?
I don't even know if he's really 6'8". Like, he looks like... In the same way Charles Barkley was like 6'6".
Yeah.
I think Zion is like a very thick 6'6", in real life, but like plays much bigger.
And just a great player. And boy, we'll be talking about him, I'm sure, for his career. But what a show we have today. We're going to talk a little bit with our good friend from the Associate AD of Equipment at Kansas. Larry Hare is going to join us next segment. And we know what happened at Kansas this week. The brawl that got that at the end of the game, the Kansas State kid steals the basketball. Kansas guy comes back and blocks it. Then they stands over him. Then the fight happens and all hell broke loose and at the Fog and it went into the crowd. Larry's going to come on and we'll talk a little bit about that. I think what Bill Self did was pretty impressive. Showed a lot of leadership out of Bill Self. We'll talk about that. But also talk to Larry a little bit about college basketball today and where he sees it. You know, there's a lot of people that think it's unwatchable right now. You've got athletes leaving early, and we'll talk to Larry about that, Austin, today.
Yeah, that I tell you what, that I watched that video of that brawl a couple times, like the next day. I saw on Twitter, because I'm up late at night, I saw it like unfold. I was like, ooh, there's something going on there. But I really wasn't that into it at, you know, 11 o'clock at night or whatever it was. So I checked it in the next day. That was like, it was, all of it was very weird. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, this is really out of control. Yeah. And I'm curious to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, and Larry knows his stuff, so it'll be interesting to get his perspective. We're going to hit on the Derek Jeter stuff. Obviously, he's a Hall of Famer. We know all the talk's been the one gentleman that did, I don't know who, it was a girl or a guy that didn't vote him in. We don't know who that is. Eli's retirement, we're going to get into. I'm wearing my Eli jersey today in respect of my guy Eli Manning for his retirement. We'll get into that. But I want to start this morning with an article I read this morning that was on Bleacher Report about, you know, we've talked many times about the game of baseball and my frustration with changing of rules for games. It drives me batty. We can talk about it. But I found an article on Bleacher Report this morning So basically, Rob Manfred was on the Fox Business Network with Maria Bartiromo this past week, I guess, or sometime lately. I guess it was, looks like sometime in last week, I'm guessing, or last weekend. And here's this quote. We're going to be using it, meaning robot umpiring. We're going to be using robot umpiring during spring training and in some of our minor leagues this year. The way it works is the camera calls the ball or strike and communicates it to an earpiece that an umpire has in his ear. And from a fan's perspective, it looks exactly like it would look today. We believe over the long haul, it's going to be more accurate. It will reduce controversy in the game and be good for the game. We think it's more accurate than human beings standing there. I got to tell you, this drives me batty again.
Which is, it's wild because this intersects at two points of prickliness for you. The like umpire referee
sure.
situation in all sports.
Yeah.
And then rules. So well, yeah, this is again, like you're like I can see the hair on the back of your neck just standing
and
up,
and the three hair I have on my head standing
those
up.
Those three too.
I mean, what gets me mad is this: there is nobody that's going to, and you know, and we've been doing the show for a long time. I am on umpires, officials, and referees like nobody else. Like it drives me crazy they can be either this inept or this arrogant in their job. I get it. There's a problem sometimes with officiating. I get all that stuff. But when you start taking the human element away from games, like you're doing, like he's going to try to do, or he's attempting to do, or he's trying in with Major League Baseball, I think it's a very dangerous precedent. And I've said it 1,000 times. If you don't like the game of baseball, don't watch it. If you don't like golf, don't watch it. If you don't like hockey, don't watch it. And then I hear people that will come on and they'll send me the text messages, and feel free to text right now, 655-6672.
Yeah, fire away. Put him in his place.
But the point is you're going to give me numbers. Well, baseball's struggling. The numbers aren't good. You know, if you look at the way, you know, way people are watching, garbage. It's garbage.
Hogwash.
If you put a good product on the field, people are going to watch it. If your product is not good, they're not going to watch it. The Yankee fans are not going to watch Yankee games if they're average and not good. Red Sox fans are not going to watch their team if they're not good. If your team is good, you're going to go. You're going to pay to get for the tickets. You're going to go watch games. You're going to want to watch it on television. I'll say the exact same thing for the NFL. The only difference the NFL has from Major League Baseball in terms of viewership is it's one day a week, where baseball is every day. So when your team stinks, like my team, the Giants have stunk for many years, I'm still watching the games, but I'm not paying for tickets to go watch games because they're not worth paying money to go watch. But if the Giants are good, people are going to go. And the same thing with baseball. And to me, this is how Terminator started. You know what I mean? I mean, what are you going to do? If you, and I mean this, if you start having robots call games, guy, would Maddox have ever, would be Maddox, would we have even seen a Maddox?
Yeah.
A Greg Maddox? Would he even be able to play? I mean, part of baseball is adjusting. Part of baseball is, like I said, the human element. And when you start to take those things away, again, we got people that sit in a room and they listen to social media, and the people that don't like the game are loud, and the minority is loud. And so now we've got to start making changes. I think it's a dangerous thing for baseball. Do not change the rules. You want to fix baseball? Market it better. Find your athletes that you can market and market it better. It has nothing to do with the rules. It's a great game. If you like it, let it happen. Go ahead.
I got two things for you. Did tennis going to the, I think it's called the Hawkeye system, where
I thought it was a Cyclops. Is that something new?
No, I think it's called the Hawkeye system,
okay.
Which is what, so they in the last decade or so, tennis has added it's basically a electronic, digital, you know, non-human system for judging whether the ball is in or out.
Mm-hmm.
Did that, I mean, not that you watch a lot of tennis.
Sure.
But does that ruin tennis?
I don't know. Let me tell you, probably, I don't know if that ruined tennis, or the, maybe, because who watches it? I mean, I was watching tennis a lot more when you had guys like Agassi and guys like McEnroe and guys like
Connors. That gets more into character, but in my like passing following of tennis,
yeah.
That use of, you know, technology expedites the game, takes it out of, like, it's a very small part of the tennis experience, and it streamlines the whole process. At that point, you can't yell at the ref, the umpire in the chair.
Okay.
If the system says no, it actually didn't go inside the line.
So wouldn't that be the same as what baseball is using right now for, say, instant replay for things that are foul or home runs or things like that? When you start taking the human element away from the strike zone, I mean, seriously, then what? Like what baseball's been. That's the problem I have.
And I'm looking at it like, you know, if the strike zone is the strike zone always, That's like I don't dislike that. I think you can build in probably like they could set it up however they want where, you know, if part of the ball is on the zone, it's in the zone. And like that, you can do it that way. I think if there's one part I would want, you know, umpired by robots in baseball, it would be the strike zone. That's just how I feel about it.
My opinion is that because they're testing this in the minor leagues and in spring training games, I think it's good for baseball right now because trying new things in spring training and in minor leagues, I think helps viewership outside of the dedicated fan bases for those games because people will tune in to be like, well, what does this feel like? Do I like this? Is it going to be a problem? And it's not currently hurting the major leagues if it's an unpopular thing. But if they were to just change the rule tomorrow and all of a sudden major league games are being reffed by robots, then you have no idea. You could start doing that and it could be really unpopular. Then you have to sit with it for an entire season and people are going to be unhappy. I like the way they're doing it, but I agree with you that I think the biggest problem MLB has right now is their marketing of their players. I think they can do that better. I think the game itself is largely not a problem.
I like what Aaron said about the exploratory nature. I think that's the worthwhile venture here. If you're doing it not at the highest level, not immediately, like work out the kinks, figure out whether it actually is feasible or not. The other thing I wanted to pose to you, Jeff.
Yes.
How would you feel if, you know, in football, it seems like we are way behind the times where they could put some sort of transmitter in the football to figure out whether it's actually on the field of play or not, like some GPS element in the ball to figure out, did it break the plane? Did it get across the line it was supposed to get across? Where did it go out of bounds? Like you could figure out all of those things that are otherwise pretty nebulous. You think about that weird looking spot in the Green Bay Seattle game a couple weeks ago, that wouldn't have been an issue. Whether or not the ball breaks the plane, you know for sure. Did it go around the pylon, over the pylon? Like, how does that work?
So let me just say, I don't think that, because my biggest issue when it comes to this with the strike zone is you're going to take players that aren't going to be able to play in baseball anymore. You're not going to have legendary players. You're going to have players that pitch through their prime, and that's going to be it. And that's the problem. And let me just say, as bad as I think umpiring can be, and as inconsistent as it can be, you know, for the first six innings, it's a strike. The next two innings, it's not. I get all that stuff. But when you start taking human element away and you start changing things like this, you're not going to, Greg Maddux wouldn't be around. Guy, like your favorite, like Andy Pettit's, a Yankee fan that love Andy Pettit. He would have never been able to pitch when he got to be like, say, you know, towards the end of his career. You just wouldn't have it. And I don't see this being I don't see why this is a problem. I don't get why we have to take, umpires are a bigger part of baseball than I think referees are. What you guys are talking about or what you're talking about with the, I mean, it's fine.
I think it's similar.
It's not similar because you're going to be taking people out of the game.
I don't think you can. You can make the strike zone bigger.
Then what's the point of the robot then? Like, if you're going to make it, like, don't make it bigger. Make it what it is.
It doesn't have to be drastically bigger, but marginally bigger keeps all of those, like, fringe pitchers that work on, work in the corners.
You can't do that. You got to have the human element of the umpire behind the plate, no matter how frustrating it is. You start changing this, you change the whole dynamic of the game. Now, you talk about what you're talking about, and I'll get you one. I know you got to say this, but you talk about the thing with the football. I think that's a good idea because that stuff is... You know, to me, that's one of those things where I think it would really help the NFL to do that. And because I think that sometimes it looks like these NFL games are fixed half the time when you're watching some of the decisions. But watching guys umpire, and I watch a lot of baseball, I mean, I think having robots do it is wrong. I just do. And if we keep changing rules in baseball, you're going to ruin the game. And that's going to be the end result of it. Go ahead, Aaron.
I don't know why this is necessarily, but I don't think yardage disputes in the NFL are fun. I do think the tension between umpires and batters and umpires and pitchers is fun.
I mean,
there's a pitcher who got ejected for screaming at an umpire during a game because he didn't get the pitch he wanted. That stuff's fun.
Well, would be what I miss the most.
And you're seeing it already in baseball with instant replay, so you don't have those moments, umpires. I mean, you're right. You just brought that up. Aaron Boone came out saying, my players are savages in the box. You wouldn't have had that moment if you had a robot umpire. I mean, I get trying to better anything in life. I mean, anything that you do in your life, any business, you always want to get better. You want to stay ahead of the times. But if you want to get things better, brand yourself better. Don't break things that aren't broke. Don't fix things that aren't broken. And baseball's not broken. I mean, you can say what you want about it and give me analytics and give me these stupid stats. But it, you know, you watch any of the teams that have won World Series or are competitive. They your parks are packed. Your fans like it. If your team wins, you're gonna watch it. And if the big market teams are on television, you're gonna watch it. Let me ask you a question about Thursday Night Football when it started. When you had Jacksonville and Tennessee on a Thursday night, was anybody watching?
No.
No. That's the NFL. That's because of the product you're putting out there for people to watch. If you want the passerby fan to watch golf, you make sure Tiger's there. If you want the passerby that's not a huge baseball fan to want to watch baseball, brand your players and put the big market teams, the teams that are the big teams, the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Cubs, the Angels, the Dodgers, put them on national television and let the product be the product.
So I just to keep going through the sports that have added technology for these sort of situations, how do you feel about in professional soccer where they've added the goal line technology? What's your stance on that?
I'd have to think about it more than anything else. I don't know. Okay. I mean,
would you rather the ref gets it wrong because he's out of position because he can't see it?
I think that's different than a strike zone. Okay. I like most of the stuff. Young man, probably do like something there that makes sure the call is right in the soccer world. But what I'm saying in umpiring, it's subjective. At every single, and I'm just being blunt.
Yeah.
Every single game, you know, you've got to adjust to the umpire. That's what it is. And that's what I mean. Umpiring and calling balls and strikes is different than saying making sure one play in a game is right.
I love your marketing point, because I think that's the biggest problem with baseball, is that they're the farthest behind in terms of having the most players, that if someone saw them on the street, they'd load their pants.
All right, listen, it's important to have your battery and charging system checked this time of year and your engine cooled as well. Just ask Austin. The cold temperatures can kill a weak battery seemingly out of nowhere. Green City Garage will make sure your ride is ready to push through the cold. Green City Garage, give them a call at 802-651-9299, located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5. And the Green City Garage poll question today is, would robot umpires be good for Major League Baseball? Go to 103 The Game at Twitter right now and let us know, yes or no. When we come back, we're talking college hoops with our good friend from the University of Kansas, Larry Hare. Don't go anywhere.
Now, back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
You see, I'm telling you, you get me talking about, you know, changing my favorite game, one of my favorite games.
Your face is starting to match your red Eli Manning jersey.
Yeah, yeah. Look at this jersey. I didn't even realize I had this old red jersey. Throwback, you know what I mean? The alternate jersey from, like, you know, the mid-early 2000s.
Time capsule.
Because our guy Eli Manning, you know, he's you know, this is more for my buddy Bernie Siplicki, who's probably was in tears yesterday over Eli's retirement. He's a big Eli apologist. We'll get into that.
What's later. He going to do with his like little Eli shrine?
I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Well, that's probably worth money now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, now it's all the memories. We'll get into Eli after.
Because hey. I understand it was like a Joe Boo situation.
Nothing says Joe Boo like Bernie Siplicki. There's no question about that. All right. Hey, joining us now on the TikTok Jewelers guest line here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game, our good friend, Associate AD of Equipment for Kansas, Larry Hare. Good morning, Larry. What's happening, buddy?
Morning, Jeff. How are you?
Hey, we're doing great here. Austin Danforth in the area here, just talking some sports here in the Burlington area. So thanks for joining us this morning. So listen, I know you can't get too much into it because you're very close to the situation, but arguably a lot of people think the best team in the nation right now are your Jayhawks, and obviously some tough things happening with the team at the end of the Kansas State game. And I know you can't get into too much, but I thought Bill Self showed a lot of leadership in terms of his decision with their star Silvio D'Souza. What can you tell us about the situation, Larry, and where is it today?
Well, we are adjusting as per the directives from the university and the Big 12 and all. We've got one guy sitting out 12 games. Silvio, and then David sitting out too. And there are some adjustments. We've got Tennessee in the building today. We actually have College Game Day in the building today.
Right.
So there's obviously a little bit more rehashing and replaying of that as Game Day goes on the air today. And some adjustments to be made, because obviously that's two young men in the front court that are not one a starter and one a reserve that will not be available today and on Monday. So there will be some adjustments. Luckily, they've had a few days of practice to work through that. And fortunately, we are in a situation where we do play a lot of minutes with just Doak out there and in four guards around him. But Coach owned it. You could just see it on his face.
Yeah.
It's an embarrassing and unnecessary moment that really escalated quickly, and it was unfortunate. But I think he knows and has addressed it quickly with the team on the, this is just us. This is a Kansas basketball.
Larry, a lot of people have seen what happened, and it was kind of the story of the night a few nights ago. I'm curious how you guys as an institution and an athletic department go about trying to make this sort of a teachable situation where whether or not you had stuff in place before or how this affects what you guys do going forward. Because obviously it seems like this is something you'd like to stamp out and not have ever be a thing again.
Well, I think all of us that went to college realize that those are years to learn. And we all had our moments in college where we made a mistake, and maybe people knew about it, maybe we didn't, but we learned from it and we moved on. The difference for Division I athletes, especially in the college football and college basketball realm, is some of that learning happens in a very, very public forum. And you spend a lot of time coaching these young men and women to compete, don't back down. But there's a learning point to when somebody has to be the one who says stop, pause, step back from it, de-escalate the situation. These are the learning moments. So as you mentioned, this is part of the college process, not just them playing and competing, but preparing them for life after college. Because let's be honest, most of the student athletes, I've got 450 of them here in the building, a small number of them are actually going to play professionally. So what are we doing for them to prepare them for life after, when the job or in their personal lives, they have a situation where they need to step back from rather than escalating it? And these are those learning moments. And I'm obviously partial to Bill Self. I've worked with him for 15 years, but I can't think of a better person to have these young men working with to work through this, because that's not a reflection of him. And he's going to make sure we all learn from it and are better about it going forward.
Larry, now, talking about college basketball overall, there's been a lot of talk this year that there just isn't a great team, that it's kind of an average season. There's been some talk that it's not an entertaining season, which I think is crazy. But talk about you've been around college basketball programs for a long time. You were part of some of the greatest Boston College teams that ever played over there, and now you're a part of a program at Kansas that's looked at as one of the best in the country. Talk about where college basketball is today for you in terms of the health of the game.
Well, I think you got a couple of factors going on here. One of the things that made the Boston College teams I worked with special was you had four-year players. So you've got that factor where you will always have contenders in the Power Five and in the mid-majors that every 3 to 4 years can make a run at you because they have a special group of young men or women in the program that have done it for 3 or 4 years. I think what you're seeing, though, at the highest level, where not too long ago the Kansases and the Dukes and the Kentuckys could stockpile a lot more of those top 50, top 100 recruits, you're now seeing that pool spread out a little bit, where you're not as stockpiling them as much at a KU or a Kentucky or a Duke, and you are seeing them now at the LSUs, at the Trae Young going to Oklahoma, and it's spreading that out a little bit. And this year is probably a good indicator, and transfers. I don't think anybody would argue that there are young men going to these programs, and maybe they do have 2 or 3 McDonald's All-American, and one just isn't getting as much run as he'd like, and he's going to go someplace where he can be the man and be a difference maker. Well, all of those come together where you're looking at a season like this where some might say the quality of play is down. I think the quality of the competitiveness is up, where it's going to be whoever can get hot for 6 or 8 games down the stretch, and all about the matchups, because you've got some very talented teams out there. That Baylor team that came in here and beat us a week ago, that's the best Baylor team I've seen since I've been in the Big 12, and from a quality and how they play and how they compete and how they defend. So I think you're seeing, between a spreading out of those top recruits, the proliferation of transfers, you've spread out that top-level talent, and it's giving more teams a chance.
So I guess I have a question. I'm going to use, and people laugh at me, but I'm going to use Virginia as a good example of this. So Virginia last year,
you know how I do this.
So I think it's pertinent to my next question for you. So I look at a Virginia team last year that wins a national championship. They have DeAndre Hunter that looks like he's a lottery pick. He goes with Atlanta. He's making a difference right now for the Atlanta Hawks. But you got a guy in Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy, two superstars that I think with another big season would have been lottery picks going into last year, decide to go to the draft. And you know, and Jerome's been on a bench in Phoenix, and Kyle Guy's been up and down from the G League to the. I think he scored his first basket last night in garbage time against the Bulls. He plays for Sacramento. I guess I've just never understood why if you're not guaranteed, why you'd leave that situation if the chance is better if you stay and get yourself better. I mean, what is the NBA's? I mean, again, I get all the money, and you're going to be a professional basketball player, and I get all that stuff, but I never understood the mentality if you're leaving school early. Like, you're not bettering yourself. You're not giving yourself a better chance, are you, if you go? Like, for example, I'll use Kyle Guy as an example. Very good college basketball player. Definitely wasn't you know, fine-tuned to the where he'd be a great NBA player. Decides to leave Virginia, you know, and now is kind of back and forth, and he's kind of buried on a bench where he probably would have had a huge year in college, which would have been a better situation for him going into the draft. Like, what are these kids battling in terms of why they're staying and why they're leaving?
Well, there's several factors here. One is what the NBA scouts are telling them along the way. Another is what their entourage is telling them also. I have been around several players that wanted to come back to school.
Yeah.
And the people around them, whether that's family, whether that's you want to call it handlers, whatever, are telling them, no, you got to go. Your name is as hot as ever. And there's something to that. There's something to protecting themselves from injury.
Sure.
All of those are factors along the way. But the one thing that's tough to gauge is the situation you're being drafted into. Frank Mason was National Player of the Year and as tough a competitor, as tough as a kid as I've ever worked with. And he got in a situation in Sacramento that just, there just wasn't room for him. There wasn't room or there wasn't value, and now he's with the Bucks going up and down, you know, on a two-way. Meanwhile, a year later, Devontae Graham, who wasn't National Player of the Year, but he was Big 12 Player of the Year, and you could say is equally impactful, he goes to the Hornets, sits and waits, and when Kemba goes to Boston and Terry Rozier comes to Charlotte, all of a sudden, Devontae gets his window. They realize that he... And I don't know, we follow him here. When it's late in the game for Charlotte, Devontae's got the ball in his hands, not Terry Rozier. And that's the situation. So, for Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome, that's the other. They could have been drafted by any one of a number of 30 teams, and the window just hit right. It wasn't as right for Frank as it's been unbelievable for Devontae and the opportunities he's been given. If the roles have been reversed, I can honestly see Frank having that same chance with the ball in Charlotte, but that's not the way it worked. And it's probably the biggest difference when they talk about college and professional sports is in college, you get to choose. In pro sports, especially when it comes to the draft, you go where you're drafted, and some situations may be better than others. And I think that's the unknown. I just witnessed it more with Devontae this year. And that's where it's really been clear to me is it's just about the chance. Devontae's taking advantage of it.
Do you find that the players that decide to stay the 3 to 4 years, the guys that stay through the program, through their whole, all of their eligibility, become better pros when they get there? They're more prepared?
Yeah, I think for life in general, I just think there's more, unless they come back and get exposed in some way. I can think of like a Darren Collison at UCLA who had a chance to go, came back, and just had a year that just had some players take advantage of him a little bit, and it may have hurt his draft stock. But I just think from a maturity and leadership standpoint, you're taking a little bit more of an investment. Maybe you won't be the high flash lottery pick, but man, I think you're a stronger late first round, second round pick for those that stay a little bit longer and build the resume a little bit more.
Well, maybe I'm just salty that Virginia stinks this year and those two guys really make them good. Maybe that's my problem, Larry. You know what I mean?
Well,
I've always been that obnoxious fan.
That.
You know what I mean? I'm being very selfish. You know what I mean?
Well, no, you're allowed to be. You're allowed to be. You're thinking, hey, if this guy comes back, we are great next year. They decide to go. and the way recruiting works now, shoot, can you fill the hole?
Well, let me ask. Yeah, well, let me.
And Virginia, and as strong and as consistent as Virginia has been, what they're finding out right now is when you have that many guys leave early after a national title,
right?
It's really tough to sustain. And one of the things I take a great deal of pride in what Coach has done here is with all the guys that have left early, somehow you're able to sustain competitiveness, and that's not easy.
And let me ask this question because we only have a minute left. But so will self recruit guys for say a year? That he thinks that these guys, like, for example, I'm going to recruit X, Y, and Z because I'm expecting that A, B, and C are still going to be here. You know what I mean? Do coaches recruit like that?
Oh, they have to. They have to recruit. They have to honestly over-recruit. Just because you have two seniors, you aren't recruiting the two spots. You're recruiting. You have to look at your freshman and your sophomore
right.
and think, hey, if they have the season I think they're going to have, we'll probably need to recruit four spots this year. And you want to talk about the gambling game, but that's what you have to do in these situations. Because you do have these one-and-done or two-and-dones that, hey, I'm not going to have him behind his sophomore year. I'm not going to have him beyond his freshman year. And you have to over-recruit the class with that belief or that understanding. Or that somebody, instead of transfers, is going to say, hey, I'm not getting enough run. I'm going to leave. Or that someone may redshirt. That's part of the art. Of doing this, and we're fortunate we've been able to handle it the way we have.
Vermont native Larry Hare, Associate AD of Equipment at University of Kansas. You're the best, buddy. Thanks for taking the time.
Always a pleasure, Jeff. Always a pleasure to catch up with folks back home.
All right, talk to you soon, Larry. Thanks. Larry Hare, listen, there's not a better guy to talk to about college basketball, Larry. He was a part of the, this is way before your time, but the Curly years at BC when they were, I think they got to a Final Four, or they got to an Elite Eight. Program was just under Jim O'Brien, just
program. Yep.
Just I think Connolly was their point guard. They were just an unbelievable team. They were still in the Big East back then. Now he's been at Kansas for 15 years and just the guy to talk to. But interesting perspective, I think, on college basketball, you know, and I think you can talk to him about a lot of things in that term, Austin, that you watch, you know, you remember those, even when I was a kid, when I was in high school and middle school, you know, when Bobby Hurley and Grant Hill were playing, Christian Laettner, those guys would never stay 4 years now if in today's college basketball. But you remember the product back in those days, how crazy good it was because everybody stayed 4 years, you know, and now you've got a situation where, you know, you're recruiting one and dones, and it's interesting to see how programs kind of go their ebbs and flows. And you're seeing a program like Kansas can lose guys, but they're right there. But a program like Virginia, you know, you take three best players off it. It takes a couple years to get yourself back to accountability where you could win a national championship.
Oh, yeah. And funny note about Larry. Just looking up, like he deals with equipment stuff for basketball and a bunch of other sports.
Yeah.
One of them, men's golf, until a couple of years ago, featured another Rutland guy, three-time Vermont amateur champ Drake Hull, before he transferred to Connecticut.
No kidding.
So, yeah, he would have been hooking up Drake with all his stuff.
Very, very cool. Again, that's why you're an award-winning sports player right there. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking about my guy, my favorite player of all time, my boy Derek Jeter. Don't go anywhere.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Oh, what a week it's been. And kind of like for a New York sports fan like me, well, I'm not a total New York sports fan. I'm a big Giants fan, big Yankee fan, but maybe my favorite player of all time. I mean, the guy that if you go into my man cave, I got more pictures of than my wife, is my guy Derek Jeter, is now a Hall of Famer, which we knew was going to happen. Go ahead, you got something
used to be a Derek Jeter rookie card right behind your seat.
I know. What happened to it? I want to know what happened to that.
Got put somewhere safe.
Yeah. Well, it was sitting in here for years. Nobody really took care of it. I was thinking maybe I would take care of it. That's not the kind of guy I am. I left it. But I hope somebody's taking care of that. But instead of talking about the fact that Derek Jeter, he's the best. You know, one person, he was one vote away from being unanimous. And I think that's interesting that somebody wouldn't vote him in. And I made some points on social media, and of course,
I saw a couple of those little chirps.
I'd get little jabs from people that are, and we'll get to that in a second, but I thought Buster Olney was on the huddle with the guys this week. And he had to say this about transparency. I think it's interesting. Let's listen to it.
Do you think that this situation with one person not voting it underscores what I think, is that there needs to be transparency in this. If you're going to, I'd hope that the baseball writers would go to the Hall of Fame and say, look, we want all the ballots revealed. And you know, I know why the Hall of Fame doesn't necessarily do that. They feel like they want to protect the voters who do a service for them. And my feeling is, look, if you want to be a person who makes news with a Hall of Fame vote and you turn in a ballot, then you should stand up to whatever scrutiny it is. If the scrutiny is too much, don't do it.
Right. So interesting take by Buster, and I totally agree with him. And I don't know who I'm more like. So first of all, you know, getting almost all the vote, he's a Hall of Famer, so you kind of forget about it. But how he's not unanimous, one person's going, you got to tell me why you're not voting for Derek Jeter. I don't understand it, Austin. And you know, you're going to make a stance like that. And I'm sure that the person that didn't vote for him didn't think, I'm going to be the only one. I'm sure he's not calling everybody that votes and says, hey, I'm going to be the one that doesn't vote. I'm sure he just decided in his mind that I'm not going to vote for him for whatever his reasoning is.
I've always figured the because of the Hall's history, aside from Mariano Rivera,
right.
I've always figured that, like, they have some conclave and they draw straws dude that has to be at least one dude that, like, is contractually obligated to be like, okay, the no-brainer I have to vote against.
It's a dumb rule, number one. But the thing is that
isn't a rule, but
whatever the mentality is, but the precedent is gone now. I mean, Rivera was a unanimous vote, got the unanimous vote last year, so it's over with.
I think the talking point used to be that, like, there were people in the voting block that didn't believe anybody should be a first ballot. Just flat out, like, would never vote for somebody on the first ballot.
Which is garbage, by the way. So dumb.
And what makes me more upset than this one guy, actually, is the collective mob that's out there that is actually saying, well, it's okay about this guy. I mean, look, you don't have to like Jeter. You don't have to think he's a great player. I mean, whatever your ignorant take is on Derek Jeter's career, which if you don't think Derek Jeter was a great player in a steroid era, I mean, think about this for a second. Derek Jeter's peak was in the steroid era, and he arguably was the face of baseball, and he didn't do any of that stuff.
That we know of.
Oh, come on. I mean, see, there you go. There's your Red Sox coming out of you right there. But I don't understand the mentality of saying that Derek Jeter, I mean, look at the numbers. The numbers speak for themselves. And what he does, and what he did as a player spoke for himself, for themselves.
I've got the numbers.
Go ahead, read the numbers for these people.
310 batting average over his career, 817 OPS, 1,311 RBIs, 5 silver sluggers, 5 golden gloves, 14 all-star appearances, 5 World Series, and 3.6 war per season over a 20-season career.
And that doesn't even hit what his records are in the playoffs and the World Series and what he meant to the game and what he brought to the game. And that's what I don't get. That's what people don't look at. And that's the thing. The other thing is, I don't even care about the stats. We know how good the stats are for Derek Jeter. But we don't look at the intangibles of what these guys bring to the table every single day.
3,400 hits, basically 2,000 runs.
And you're not going to vote for Derek Jeter. And then you're going to get on social media, you people, and you're going to tell me, like, oh, come on.
You
know,
some of the bait you took was from one of the Barstool rabid Red Sox
fair
dudes.
Enough, and I get it, and I know all that stuff. I get all that stuff. But at the end of the day, my point is, like, it's foolish to me to think that. It would be like me saying Tom Brady's not going to be, shouldn't be a Hall of Famer because he wasn't very mobile in the Giants, you know, good defense exposed Tom Brady. It's ridiculous. All right, Jan from Underhill, what's happening today, my friend?
It's completely preposterous. It's as preposterous as not having the Super Bowl on Saturday. But the breaking news, my sources have revealed that this non-vote was a Miami sports writer who's mad at Jeter for the way that he's had a fire sale with players, removed people from the Marlins in a way that, like, left this person disgruntled. And so this isn't about his baseball story. This is about his ownership and Marlins story, which is, I mean, just it's obscene to do that, but Jan, it's a real-life human story.
You think this is Greg Cody?
I do. I do. I think that's... I've been listening to this. I've been following the story as closely as you guys have, too, because of the fact that he's El Capitan. I mean, the guy's as flawless as Mariano in a different way and you know, wore the game, wore the integrity of the game on his shirt in a way that Red Sox fans even had to vote for or root for the guy, you know?
Yeah, Jan, I think it's a great call. And I don't know any of the, I don't have no idea who it is, but if anyone that would make a decision on not voting for him. I don't care what it is, and these guys are laughing in here, but I don't care who I don't care who doesn't vote for him. The reasoning has to be a personal reason, like something like that. You just don't look at Derek Jeter and say, I'm not going to vote for him for the Hall of Fame.
Well, Greg Cody is a weekly guest on the Dan Le Batard show for ESPN, and he's a really stodgy baseball guy.
Okay.
So
he's one of these guys that's trying to create a story out of a non-story. You know, he's one of these guys trying to throw a buzz for himself. And a guy like that, it's like reading the National Enquirer and believing what the story, the headline says.
And let's say, And let's say this about the Miami, about him talking about the Miami Marlins. Were they going to games before Jeter was there when they were spending money on these guys and they weren't putting anybody in the stadium and they had no farm system? I mean, and I've always said this about Jeter, like, you may not like it today, but let's see what the end product is with him. And Jan, thanks for the call, buddy. We always appreciate when you call in. Jan knows his stuff, obviously, here. But I just think it's crazy, Austin, that we shouldn't even be discussing it. And I get all the process of just forget about it. But to me, it's insane that you look like an athlete like Derek Jeter. It's insane to me that Ken Griffey Jr. isn't unanimous. Who looks at these guys? And that's what gets me about some of these guys. So Derek Jeter missed out on a MVP one year because there was a Boston writer that voted him sixth because he didn't like him. That's a true story. I think it was the year that Morneau won it. I mean, Jeter should have won the MVP, but because of somebody's bias, whether it's fan bias or if it's a personal bias, that's just unfair. That's just not fair to this guy. It's ridiculous.
So I'd sort of spaced when I heard that Jeter missed by a vote that Rivera was unanimous just last year. But once you look at some of the names that didn't get unanimously voted in, it kind of makes me feel like almost no one should. Like Griffey.
Sure.
Like I'm just working back in the percentages. Griffey missed by 3 votes. I don't know how 3 people in the world that saw Ken Griffey play baseball could not, like, if without injuries, when he left Seattle, he was the most watchable baseball player of my lifetime. He had the prettiest swing in the history of baseball.
No question.
He was impeccable in center field. He had speed. He had power. He was my favorite player growing up.
You can go down all of these names, and I'm with you 100%.
Nolan Ryan.
Sure. How do you not?
Like,
exactly.
I know he was a flawed pitcher, but his durability and the sheer numbers he put up, if he's not a unanimous Hall of Famer in the idea of what a Hall of Famer is, who is?
But I think instead, like, we should, now that we've broken that precedent with Mariano Rivera, we should just clean the slate, acknowledge that a lot of the guys who didn't get it unanimously back in the day was because of something that was stupid, an unwritten, stupid rule amongst the sports writers. And from now on, if you're a guy who just deserves to get in, no argument about it, really, you should just get it. It's not that complicated. It's very black or white with guys who are this good.
You look at the number of voters, too.
Yeah.
Like 400 plus voters. Some of these years, there was 500 and, like, when Greg Maddux went in 14, 571 voters. 16 of them didn't vote for him. I don't know how that happens. That's too many voters.
I think what it comes down to is, at the end of the day, he's a Hall of Famer, and that should be the focus on what happens. Because once you're in, doesn't matter how many votes you get. But I think what we're talking about here in the social media world and in the world of 24-hour news, and we have to talk about something, this has dominated it. But when you look at a player like Derek Jeter, you know, I would never have argued this if it was last year with Mariano Rivera, even though I think he was the greatest closer of all time, just because he was a closer, I could understand it. But Derek Jeter, in the middle of a world in Major League Baseball that was so against steroids, it was a terrible time for baseball. There was one guy that was out in front. And if you look at what he did, how he did it, and what he represented, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame unprecedentedly by 100% vote. He just does. And I know that Griffey was a great player. I don't know how he didn't 100%. Nolan Ryan, I get all that stuff. But in an era that needed Derek Jeter, Derek Jeter was there. And at the end of the day, to me, he should have been 100%. And for someone not to put him in at 100% is just insane to me. And there's an axe to grind. And you shouldn't be allowed to vote if that's your mentality. I mean it. I mean, really, if you can look at yourself in the face and say, in the mirror, and say, I'm not going to vote for this guy, I mean, you shouldn't have a vote.
Yeah, that school of thought needs to die.
Funniest thing I saw on Twitter about this. Someone said they knew who had the vote that didn't vote for him, and it was a gif of Minka Kelly as the character from Friday Night Lights. just sort of looking up and winking, and I was like, oh, perfect.
Well, then Minka Kelvino, one of his ex-girlfriends. Yo, by the way, I mean, if you read some of the stories on Derek Jeter's escapades, I mean, you know, listen.
Fruit baskets.
I mean, yeah. I mean, listen. There's two people besides myself, like, you know. Yeah, Derek Jeter and Tom Brady. I mean, those two guys just, you know, they've had it good. You know what I mean? They've had it good. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, it's Out in Left Field time. Don't go anywhere.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
All right, buddy, what do you got today?
Florida cold spells.
Take two. Oh,
yeah.
It is chilly.
Cut. All right. Florida cold spell leads to falling iguana alert.
It's true.
So the National Weather Service routinely warns people about falling rain, snow, and hail, but temperatures are dropping so low in South Florida that the forecasters warned residents Tuesday about falling iguanas. This isn't something we usually forecast, but don't be surprised if you see iguanas falling from the trees tonight as lows drop into the 30s and 40s, NWS Miami tweeted. So basically,
yeah, it happened.
They're cold-blooded animals. They're not supposed to be in temperatures that low. They're falling out of trees, and it can, just like with koalas that fall asleep in trees and fall, it can cause people to get hurt.
Oh, that would hurt like crazy.
And it would freak me out.
Don't they have, like, iguanas have, like, spiky scales?
All the way down their back.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, spines down their back.
And I was in the Keys not a couple years ago, and they're everywhere. I mean, they're like squirrels up here. I'm telling you, I was sitting by a pool, and all of a sudden, an iguana came walking across. Everyone's like, I'm freaking out, jumping
Tyler,
up on top
with
of
Grammarly's help.
Whoa. See that? I freaked out just like that. I saw an iguana walking across, you know, right below my chair that I was sitting on.
It's 2 weeks in a row that an ad playing on the computer has gone over the air.
Yeah. Very
creepy. That's because it's, I'll tell you what's out in left field is this place is haunted. I mean, just so we all understand, this is like a haunted building. You know that,
oh,
right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But yeah, that would talk about pestilence. Like, the iguanas falling from the sky.
Yeah. And it happens often. I'll tell you, that's the thing, though. I don't know if you'd want to be looking up when one was falling, because you don't want to get that. You just get it on the head, deal with it.
Right.
But you hope they're okay. You don't want anything to happen to them.
As long as they don't fall. So basically, they just sort of fall asleep. So as long as they don't fall so far that they hurt themselves, right, they should be fine. They said most of them just wake up the next day when it warms up.
Yeah. Well,
the fall doesn't wake them?
they can't move.
Well, they basically go into a coma because they're cold-blooded, so they need the heat to function.
I think the impact, like, if you're falling from, like, say there's a limb on a tree that's like 10 feet up, I would think that would wake you up.
Well, listen, I had a few nights in college that I fell off a bunk bed, like, then I didn't, you know, it was fine. You know what I mean?
Did you wake up?
Yeah, I mean, later on.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I'm just kidding, of course. My mother listens to this show. I'm just kidding, Mom. That never happened. Anyway, you got to be careful out there when it's cold. That's the point. I feel the same way about these iguanas do living in Vermont. I mean, I got up the other couple days. It was 3 degrees. I didn't want to get out of bed either. I was just laying there. I didn't want to move. And if I fell out of bed, I fell out of bed. It's too cold to get up.
You poor girl.
I know. Well, listen, I hate the cold. I know it's terrible to say. We live in Vermont. It's winter. You should like the snow and skiing and all that garbage. I hate it. That's why yesterday not a beautiful day.
Yesterday was lovely.
It felt warm.
Day before was good too.
I had my windows down on my lunch
break. It's
beautiful,
right?
Nice.
Beautiful.
It was so good.
But it's only January, and we know we got like 4 or 5 big snowstorms and a couple big cold snaps before we can enjoy, you know, because spring is the worst time of year here. It's the biggest tease, by the way. People say, oh, it's spring. You're like, oh, big deal.
It gets just warm enough to make it muddy.
It's going
to
be 60 degrees today, and it's going to be a blizzard tomorrow. I hate that.
The iguanas will stay in the trees.
Exactly. All right, we'll take a quick break. Actually, we don't take any break because it's sports update time with my buddy Aaron.
How do the Patriots handle Tom Brady? What's up in the draft? Your home for Pats off-season talk is WCPV Essex Burlington Plattsburgh. 101.3 The Game. The Game. Trending now.
What's going on, everybody? I'm Aaron Wells with your 101.3 The Game sports update. UVM men's basketball host UMass Lowell tonight. Jake Marsh has the coverage starting with the pregame show at 6:30 right here on 101.3 The Game. UVM men's hockey will face off against Merrimack once again tonight after their first matchup ended with a 5-5 tie yesterday. Puck drops tonight at 7:05 and Michael Lear is on the call starting with the pregame show at 6:30 on our sister station WVMT. The Boston Celtics take on the Pelicans tomorrow and will get their first taste of this year's number one overall draft pick, Zion Williamson. Tip-off is at 7 p.m. Cover starts at 5:30 with the pregame show over on 960 The Zone. This 101.3 The Game Sports Update was brought to you by The Archives, a combination arcade and bar that focuses on vintage arcade games, unique craft beers, and creative cocktails located at 191 College Street in downtown Burlington. Come down and help them make this Australia Day great. They've got Adelaide's very own Cooper's beer, meat pies, and nationally appropriate music all day long. People of all ages are welcome from 12 to 5, and they'll also be accepting donations to the CFS Foundation, which provides financial support to the CFS volunteer firefighters who are currently risking their lives to fight the devastating fires in Australia. Now it's time for Sports Saturday, Hour 2. We are living the dream and taking you with us on 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com. We're always streaming on the 101.3 The Game app, or you can watch us live on Twitch at twitch.tv/1013thegame.
101.3 The Game.
Getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
I'm walking away today feeling like a New Yorker. Well, at least a Northeasterner. And that says a lot about a guy from New Orleans who went to Ole Miss. Since I've only been here, I'm biased when I say that the New York Giants are the greatest organization in the NFL in how they treat players, coaches, and personnel. The team's driving commitment to win football games. It's a rarity, but here, team always comes first. It's been an honor to be a part of this family, and I hope that I've represented the organization in the way that you wanted me to from my first day to my last. For most of my life, people have called me easy. Believe me, there is nothing easy about today. Wellington Mara always said, once a giant, always a giant. For me, it's only a giant.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join us today. 802-655-6672 or text us in the Town Fair Tire text line. Same number, 655-6672. That was Eli Manning announcing yesterday that he is retiring after 16 years of football with the New York Giants. And to me, this is the time where I am wearing my Eli jersey. I have been, for the last 4 or 5 years, frustrated with his play, frustrated with the fact that the Giant organization allowed him to continue to be the starting quarterback. But I think now that he's retired, you remember the good times and everything that he brought to your fan base, especially during his prime. Now, I would argue during his prime that he was never the elite quarterback that I think... If you followed this at all, I followed it fairly closely. If you see some of his former teammates and even players playing, Drew Brees spoke out about, Tom Brady sent some tweets out about it. You know, he is revered as one of the greats, or he is portrayed as one of the great players of the NFL and one of the greats of all time. And people talk about the Hall of Fame. So I'm not sure if he's that, Austin, and this is coming from a Giant fan. I'm not sure if Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer. The way I look at Hall of Famers, I guess. But I will say that, you look at, he played for the Giants, an iconic organization. He twice beat the franchise and the Patriots in the middle of their, in the prime of the Patriots. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the team that was undefeated, he finds a way to get the job done. Now, people will argue that it wasn't Eli Manning that beat them that day. It was Justin Tuck and Michael Strahan and OCU Manure and the boys that were taking care of Brady and keeping the Giants in the game. But you have to say Eli Manning has maybe, and in my opinion, the most iconic play in Super Bowl history. Whether we determine or not, whether that was even a good throw or not, I don't know if it was a better play by Tyree, or the better story was the fact that Eli got out of the, got away from, I don't even think Seymour had him. And it looked like every defensive player in the Patriots. Look at Austin's want to talk about this as his Patriots.
No, I'm ready to. I'm ready to be the bigger man.
But again, I think the best throw of Eli's career was in the second Super Bowl against the Patriots, the Manningham early in the, he was there. I think they were like inside the 10-yard line. He hit him on the sideline. He kept his feet, and that arguably is the best throw he's ever made. Two championships, two Super Bowl MVPs. If he went to the Pro Bowl, his numbers are, in my opinion, somewhat pretty average. But I guess we can start the conversation today because yesterday was his day. Is he a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
You think so?
Yeah.
Why?
Two Super Bowls.
You think two Super Bowls is enough to get you in the Hall of Fame?
The two Super Bowls takes him from what your words just now, average or slightly above average, to slightly above average. If he was sort of the middle of the pack for most of his career, sometimes closer to the top tier, towards the end closer to the bottom tier, those two Super Bowl runs ultimately lift him up because there's only X number of quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls.
But do you think that, again, you forget that both of those teams that won Super Bowls had, you know, they didn't have great seasons. I mean, I would say his best year was the year that Plaxico Burress shot himself in the leg.
Mm-hmm.
And you think he may have had three Super Bowls if he ends up, because that was their best team. And then when Plaxico shot himself, it did the whole dynamic of the team change, obviously, not having Plaxico Burress. But that's a perfect example right there to me that I'm not sure Eli is a Hall of Famer. Because you take Plax off the field and the Giants became, from an elite football team that you thought could win numerous championships, to an average offensive football team. And I've heard people say, I saw it on social media today, that, well, Eli never had anybody elite playing. It was always about him. That is not anywhere near the truth.
No.
When you look at the players that played with Eli Manning, you know, Plaxico Burress, Amani Toomer, Tiki Barber, Brandon Jacobs, Ahmad Bradshaw, Victor Cruz, Mario Manningham,
Hakeem
Nicks. I mean, there were some phenomenal players around him.
This is the conversation Alex Abrami and I had a couple days ago in the Free Press newsroom, where you look at the guys that he was able to throw to, and he starts his career and ends his career with like he had out and out alpha receivers that he could throw to.
Yeah.
With Plaxico Burress was an alpha. He was a slightly slower, just as big.
Agreed.
Randy Moss.
Plaxico Burress, arguably to me, during that era, was the best wide receiver in football.
After Randy Moss. So Plaxico Burress, Eli gets to start with an alpha on one side, and he has a guy like Amani Toomer on the other side. That's a really good situation for a quarterback. In the middle stage of his career, he had two different guys, one Hakeem Nicks, one Victor Cruz, both hobbled by injuries, unfortunately.
When Hicks and Cruz were together with them the first time, they were both, there was no injury issues then.
Right. And both of those looked like they could be long-term alpha receivers.
Agreed.
That had alpha-like moments when they played for the Giants. Then those guys were gone. But the third option on those teams was Manningham, who was a underrated receiver, I think. For his pass catching ability,
he was a Amani Toomer with speed.
And then you go to the late stage of his career, and he had the guy he threw more TDs to than anybody else, Odell Beckham Jr. Which, granted, the end of Odell's run was troublesome, but threw 44 touchdowns to the guy. Odell was an undisputed alpha quality receiver for his playmaking ability. So you think Eli had plenty of talent around him. I like maybe that does give more credit to you. You look at a guy like Brady. How many alpha quality receivers did he have?
None.
That he didn't make?
None.
He had Moss for a couple years. He had Gronk for six or seven.
Okay, he had Moss towards the end of Moss's career. And I would say that Tom Brady and the Patriots recreated Moss to me than Moss recreating anything for the Patriots.
Or got him to perk up a bit.
Right.
But anyway, I'm just going on a limb. I'll go back. This is the other part of the discussion Alex and I had. He maintains that the throw to Manningham was the best, the greatest throw in Super Bowl history. Probably was. I'm in the camp that rewatching the highlight this week. That was a tougher catch than it was throw. Being like my barometer here, Eli was not pressured when he threw the ball. He stepped up into the pocket, had all day, got to pick a spot and throw to it. If he got to do that 50 more times, he'd probably put it in that garbage pail at least two or three more times. Manningham made the play by the catch, double coverage, falling down over the shoulder.
Aaron wants to get it, but I gotta rebut that. I mean, it was a great catch, but he put it there. I mean, that I have to give Eli, and I give Eli a lot of garbage. That was an elite throw.
I'm just saying the catch was more elite.
Totally agree. But when you put a let's be honest about Manningham. Did Manningham? It's in stride. I mean, he threw it. The only place you could put the ball, he put it. So that was a great throw. Great play by Manningham, but an unbelievable throw by Eli Manning.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if you put it any further inside, it's not a catch. If you put it any further outside, it's uncatchable. But for receivers laying out like that and making sure your feet stay in bound, that's something only top-tier athletes and top-tier receivers in terms of focus are able to do. What I want to talk about is, so Eli's stats make it hard because his career was a net average, I think, but it was very up and down. So he had 9 seasons of 4,000 yards or more and 7 seasons of 7 yards per attempt or more. That's very good. but he averaged 15 interceptions per season, and he had two seasons where he was over 24, which is that's really rough, and that makes it hard for teams to win. And I think the turnovers and stuff are part of why his record was so average. Was it turnovers make a huge difference in, in the way a ball game turns up? But his leadership on the field, I think, helps his case to the to the Hall of Fame, because you listen to the way his guys talk about him. They say his behavior as a man helped them be better as players.
And let me just say this: I think Eli is probably top five people that have ever played. Okay, so we're not talking about his character, but I would disagree that he. And I shouldn't say that this is going to say because I've never played with Eli Manning. I've never been in an NFL roster. I have no idea. But Eli Manning didn't look like he was in the sideline firing people up very much. I mean, Eli Manning wasn't that's what I hungered for as a fan of the Giants when things got tough for the Giants. When things got tough, was he never saw, you saw Brady getting in people's faces and let's go. You saw that from all the elite quarterbacks. You never saw that from Eli. I mean, the biggest thing that got made about Eli was Eli facing the sideline, his hair everywhere and him just kind of sitting there. And I think that, to me, is what. So when you say great leadership, obviously, go ahead, Aaron, what do you got?
Although I totally agree. I think what the main difference is, if you listen, like Victor Cruz, we have Victor Cruz here. It's basically talking about it's his accountability and humility.
Sure. Got it.
Just being an Iron Man, just being accountable, just being there when you needed him the most, when you needed someone to make a play, when you needed someone to carry the weight of the team on his shoulders, he took it. And he never pointed a finger at anyone on the team, never pointed the blame at anybody else. He always made sure that win, lose, or draw, he's going to take the pressure and take the heat off the team and bring everybody better. And I think that made us respect him. It made us raise our level of play, and it just made us go out there with a certain passion and a certain discipline to go out there and play with this guy, because you knew that he was going to bring all he had each and every time he stepped out on that football field.
So knowing that if the team flopped, he would take the bullet every time.
Yeah, and I get that. And I'm not saying that he's not a good leader for that. And I'm not saying maybe he was a great leader, and I'm not saying I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is we're looking at a Hall of Fame athlete here. Would we be having this conversation if he didn't play in New York too? If he wasn't a New York Giant, would we be having this conversation about Eli Manning?
It wouldn't be as pressing.
I mean, I guess, that's the other thing. And again, it's hard to say because I'm a huge Giants fan. And I mean, and the other thing is, would I be having this conversation, would I feel this way if he retired 5 years ago? Because 5 years ago, I think I'd be saying no. I'd look at him differently. But to me, the last 5-6 years or since, I mean, I'd say, after they won the Super Bowl in 11, 2-3 years after that, you kind of felt like he was hanging on. And the team made really poor decisions. And if you listen to Dave Gettleman's press conference at the end of the season, and Dave Gettleman doesn't talk a whole lot, but he said it basically that the organization was trying to put people around Eli to get him another championship. I mean, how do you look at that? Eli Manning was nowhere near the athlete or the quarterback to get you a championship, let alone a playoff situation. And you're drafting Odell Beckham Jr., and you're drafting Evan Ingram, and you're drafting these guys that are all offensive threats and great players, but you haven't done anything to fortify this team. And now the football Giants right now are in the middle, or hopefully towards the end, of that mistake. So to me, Eli hung on too long. If this was 5 years ago, I'd probably feel a lot different about Eli Manning. But I'll tell you, when you look at history and what he's brought to the table, I mean, that's what's so hard about this. It's like he really is a big part of NFL history.
Yeah.
And when you're the head, when you're the quarterback of an organization like the New York Giants and you've won two championships, I mean, I would argue that Phil Sims deserves to be in the Hall of Fame before Eli Manning in some capacity.
I'm looking at some of the quarterback names in the Hall of Fame and guys that I feel make Manning's case better.
Yeah.
I could be over my skis a little bit, but I'm looking. Kurt Warner, limited time, won Super Bowl championship. Was very good for probably half, like arguably top three quarterback stat-wise for probably half his career.
Well, but when did he come into? No, he was great till 2013, 2012.
But there was fits and starts.
Kurt Warner was an elite quarterback his whole career. Difference maker. Eli Manning's not a difference maker.
How do you weight the Super Bowls? I'm looking at where am I here? Namath is one of arguably the weakest resume of a Hall of Fame quarterback, which might be a product of his era. The last one I was thinking of, Dan Fouts. He was Air Coryell there for the Chargers, part of opening up the passing game, but they didn't win a Super Bowl.
And God, his numbers were insane. These guys, I mean, Namath, I'll give you, but I think Namath is in the Hall of Fame because of what he represented to a football league that wasn't what it is today. I mean, this was the AFL and the NFL back in those days. Joe Namath is one of the reasons that we have an NFL now and not two different leagues. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I look at Eli and I watched him every game, his whole career, and I loved him. I get it. But you never thought that you had a quarterback under center ever that was a difference maker. When you look at Brady and you look at Roethlisberger and you look at the Montanas and the Steve Youngs, I mean, I'm just trying to pop in my head at the quarterbacks that were difference makers. I'm just not sure Eli was. And I think a perfect example is in the middle of his prime, the year Plaxico shot himself in the leg. You went from having Plaxico burst on the outside to Hickson. And the team changed. They lost in the first round of the playoffs. Great quarterbacks, elite quarterbacks, get you through losing your number one wide receiver.
For me, I think if Eli was more efficient with the other numbers staying the same, he'd probably make it. But take, for example, Phillip Rivers. So we look at Eli Manning's main career stats. It's 60% completion percentage, 57,000 yards, 7 yards per attempt, 366 touchdowns, and 244 interceptions. If the interceptions are lower, great. But you look at the Phillip Rivers, who, you know, they basically were swapped.
Yep.
Phillip Rivers had 64% completion percentage, 59,200 yards, 7.8 yards per attempt, 397 touchdowns, and 198 interceptions. So fewer interceptions, and all of his positive stats were higher.
And I would argue that Phillip Rivers didn't have the weapons that Eli had through most of his career. And he had good teams, don't get me wrong, but he didn't have the defense.
I'm just so not in Phil Rivers' camp. As much as it pains me, I would take Eli over Phil Rivers.
In his prime.
Maybe not in his prime, but Phil Rivers ultimately didn't win anything.
No, I get it. I don't think he's wholly unreliable.
A lot of people feel like in 2010 they would have won something, but their special teams was so bad that it tanked their entire season.
Yeah, I look at Phillip Rivers the player, and I look at Eli the player. And again, it's hard to say this because I'm a Giant fan, and I do think highly of Eli, who he is, what he represents, what he meant to the community down there. I mean, he was NFL, you know, Person of the Year a bunch of times. He's the one that wore the gold football player on his jersey. I mean, he's a great human being. So we're not talking about him as a human being or even as a leader, because Eli got up there every single day and took the bullets. And in New York City, that's very difficult. But I also think that Eli Manning, because of that, you know, he's very revered in the city. He's one of those athletes that you can't believe the media hasn't gone after more. That's why we talked to New York writers, I can never believe that you're not attacking him more, because they've been so bad and he's been so bad. I mean, his decision making was so bad the last 5 or 6 years. He struggled. The team just kept putting him back out there.
Yeah, you get the benefit of the doubt,
but not in New York City usually.
You have to be pretty special to get the benefit of the doubt, and he did. Before we get out, I'll just say, rewatching that play, the Tyree play, our top three play in Super Bowl history.
Sure. I think it's a top.
That's a different debate.
We actually have a texter who said Lynn Swann's catch against the Cowboys was the greatest.
That was very good. Malcolm Butler's interception. There are plays out there. But I'm watching that play again, and it hurts like it did the first time. And that was a dozen years ago.
Let me just look at that play again. Let me just see. Maybe I want him in the Hall of Fame.
He could have been sacked 2 or 3 times.
Oh, yeah.
Made a throw into the middle of the defense against a guy covered by arguably the most physical safety of his generation, who gets a hand on the ball and can't pop it loose somehow.
It's unbelievable.
It hurts.
And let me just say, and again, we'll leave this because, you know, like I had the last word, my boy Austin. But yes, there have been better plays made, maybe more athletic, but never has there been a more crazy play in an NFL game that determined a game than the play with Tyree.
We actually were talking about before the show how that play was like hope coming out of a place where there was no hope.
And I can tell you, the feeling I got when he made that catch was unbelievable for me. Like, I can just tell you, I remember where I was. It was unbelievable. I think my head hit the ceiling. I jumped up so high. And then my buddy Keith wanted to take his dog out to the bathroom. And I was like, you sit your butt down. You're going to be bad luck. Everyone stays where they are until this thing is over with.
So you went up and I became puddle of Pabst Blue Ribbon and nachos on the floor.
Well, you and your Patriot fans landed on your feet. Okay, let me just say that. All right, we'll be right back.
Yeah, we did.
The high school coach and the high school reporter who comments on that coach. How do they do a show together? It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
man, we are going topic to topic today. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. I am your host, Jeff Paul, Austin Danforth, Aaron Wells. We've talked robots, umpires. We've talked college basketball. We've talked Derek Jeter, Eli Manning. And now let's move over to your favorite team, Austin.
Yeah.
And Aaron's favorite team, and when it comes to baseball, the Boston Red Sox. Interesting things happen with Boston. A lot happening. I moved to the Red Sox, and feel free to call us, 655-6672, or keep your texts coming in. There's so many texts today that I'm having trouble. I'm not even able to get to them because there's so many. People are making great points, which we like, so keep them coming in here on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Or like I said, call us, same number. But let's talk some Red Sox here, man. I mean, a week ago, you know, or a week and a half ago, we have everything that's going on with Houston. And, you know, so, and things have been done. And the Red Sox have let Cora leave, so now there's no manager in Boston.
Yep.
There's talk about Betts to the Padres. There's, Pedroia got hurt again. We don't know if he's back. Interesting stuff, though, to me, when it comes to the Betts to the Padres piece, to not having a manager. Because to me, I feel like the Red Sox are setting something up here to trade Betts before they get the manager. I feel like that's what's happening here. Because I can't imagine the Boston Red Sox at this point right now, not having a manager, at least, you know, where you think you're feeling pretty close to getting somebody. It's just interesting to me.
I think my opinion as to why that is that they are waiting for the investigation to end. And if it ends and nothing was found, they'll probably move Ron Renneke into that spot.
Okay.
If not, then they'll have to clean house and then they'll find someone else.
Well, maybe you're right. But to me, I just think for an organization like the Boston Red Sox, you know, well, let's say J.D. Martinez, star of the Red Sox, had this to say this week. Go ahead.
You know, it sucks. I'm going to be honest with you. It does suck. But you know what? I think, I know I'm excited for the investigation to get over with just so they can see that there was nothing going on here.
That's what they'll find?
I believe that, yes.
Well, you know, you believe it. Well, you better. I mean, is it true or not? But to me, I don't look at the Red Sox and I'm thinking there's nothing there. There's no there to me, at least that I've heard. Like, you know, Houston, you always heard they were cheating. Like, you kind of knew. And again, baseball sent a memo out saying, hey, we know what's going on. Knock it off. And they just were too arrogant to stop it. But the Red Sox, there's none of that talk, for the exception of maybe that iWatch situation or the iPad thing that went a couple years ago. But I don't think there's going to be a there with the Red Sox. I think getting rid of Cora was basically because Cora was the ringleader in Houston. And I don't think that there's a real scandal right now with cheating in Boston. That's why I think deep down inside, the organization knows that there isn't. But if what you're saying is true, Aaron, that they're waiting for this to get done, then that makes me nervous if maybe the Red Sox are cheating. Maybe there is an issue there because the organization would know, the ownership would know, and leadership would know that, look, we're clean here. Let's find a manager. Because, listen, this is the Boston Red Sox we're talking about here. Not having a manager yet is kind of crazy.
If management doesn't know for sure, that's not a good sign.
That I agree there. I think it's still January.
Spring training starts, what, 3 weeks? Pitchers and catchers?
You got 3 weeks.
No, you got 3 weeks. Get somebody. Call me. I'll do it. Give me a call.
I
just think for the Red Sox organization,
there's no baseball to coach right now.
Fair enough. But you still have to bring a new body into an organization. I mean, there's a lot there.
I'm sure they got a list.
I'm sure they have a list.
Yeah.
But how do you not have? But that's my point. Now, you made me think now, Aaron, because here I am thinking, well, they're probably waiting to see if they can get a deal for Betts and then bring the right guy in to manage a team that might be down Betts. Because if you're looking at this deal with the Padres, you're looking at Will Myers coming back. Now, the Padres have a great farm system, so I'm sure you get some pieces. But Will Myers is not Mookie Betts, obviously, and he's been struggling the last couple years. So what I'm saying is, my mindset before you just said that to me was they're just waiting to trade Betts. That's what I was going to say, is I think there's a big trade coming. They'll get these kids in here, then they're going to hire the right guy. What you just said to me is that you may think that the organization's waiting for this investigation to get over to get themselves cleared before they make a move for Renneke. You know if you're cheating or not. If you're cheating, you know it. The organization knows it. You don't think the Astros owners and GM and all their coaches didn't know it? You know it if you're cheating. And then you listen to J.D. Martinez there, and part of me says, yeah, J.D. Martinez knows they're not cheating. I don't see any. I mean, not that you'd know, but there has been nothing that makes them look like they're cheaters. But then he says, and then somebody asked J.D. Martinez, do you think, is that what they're going to think? He's like, I think so. What do you mean you think so? You know, so either you're cheating or you're not, JD. Now I've changed my whole thought process before this segment started.
Maybe it's they know Alex Cora was doing some stuff in the Red Sox organization. They just want to know who else was implicated.
But you think you would know that if your ownership, you think the coaching staff would know, you think you would understand that. If Cora, did Cora resign or they fire him? I can't remember.
It was a mutual agreement. So they both walked into the room at the same time and said,
yeah. We're done. Exactly.
What Cora was saying was he felt like basically with the stuff out on him, he wasn't going to be able to manage his players effectively. And the organization felt like it was not good for the organization to have a known cheater on the team. So maybe it was mutual.
Clearly untenable.
Yeah.
But don't you think it's odd to me? I mean, Houston right now has got a list of, they're interviewing to manage. They got Buck Showalter was in there, and I think Brad Ausmus is on those. I was listening to it this morning on the Major League Baseball Network driving over here.
They know where they stand.
They know where they're going. But the Red Sox should know where they stand, too. The investigation's not over for Houston, either.
Well, if they don't know what the punishment might be for whatever degree of what they did, that might make it a less attractive job for whomever they want to hire. So they might be not coming from a position of strength as they approach potential candidates.
Houston knows that they're getting burned.
There are a few organizations in Major League Baseball that can probably pick who they want to manage. And the Boston Red Sox are one of those teams.
But if whoever they want is going to go in there with like their arm tied behind their back for whatever reason, or they're still trying to make sure what they can do with Mookie, like that, there's a couple big variables out there.
I agree with you there. So if the Mookie bet situation is a reason they haven't done, I get that. But what you're saying to me is correct, and I don't know if it's correct or not. They're waiting to find out, get the investigation get through, and I don't know if this is true or not, to see if any other coaches need to get fired or get released or whatever. Then that's uncomfortable if you're thinking about where the Red Sox were in all this. That's uncomfortable. Now, that you just put that in my head. I have no idea if that's the case or not, but I just can't imagine the Red Sox not interviewing people to manage a team. Or maybe they already know who they're going to get and they're waiting. Maybe it's Veritek. And I think that would, as from a fan base, I'm sure you guys would love Jason Veritek, right? And I think it would, and I'll tell you something else. If it is Jason Veritek, it's a smart move by the Red Sox organization because it'll be a good story. Ron Renicki is not going to get Red Sox fans fired up. Okay? It's just not going to happen. But Veritek would, and I think for an organization that might be struggling right now in terms of perception, I think that'd be a good move for the Red Sox.
That's one of the tough things about the Renicki hire, I think, is the fact that Cora has already been implicated and Renicki was on his staff. I think there'll be certain Red Sox fans who never trust anyone on that staff ever again.
Was Renicki in Houston with him?
He came from Milwaukee.
Okay. Yeah. So Renicki wasn't with him in Houston. And when Cora did all this, he was with Houston. So the reason Cora stepped down had nothing to do with his coach. It had to do with what he did in Houston. And he really was the ringleader in Houston. Well, and it looks like Beltran had a little bit to do with it, too.
But you know how fans are. They anyone connected to someone who did something bad, that there's going to be doubt and questioning.
Why I think the Veritek signing would be perfect.
I don't, as a Red Sox fan, I don't know that I would. That would have been my thought. Like, why am I worried if my team's trying to cheat to win? Like, it's not going to affect me.
I got
to
say, I just got a text here, and I got to say, the Sox all, this is a great point, too, that makes you think maybe. The Sox all had career years in the year they won the World Series. That makes me raise my eyebrow, and that's a pretty good point.
That is a good point, because what we talked about this year was, everybody sort of maximized their potential in 2018, and then reverted to a different level of play this year. Which one's the real thing?
That's interesting.
So then is the implication that when the MLB said they knew what was going on, the Red Sox stopped and that's why they fell off?
I mean, I don't know that answer, but that's another great point. That's a great text we just got. I mean, that to me, they did. Look what Betts and JD Martinez and Bogaerts did last year. I mean, they all had career years. I mean, when you looked at the Red Sox that year, they were every single one of them could have. They had three guys that could have been MVP.
Betts batted .347 and JD was like .320 or something.
Everybody on the roster you got everything you could out of everybody on the roster.
Now, as a Yankee fan, I'm so angry. They're just stealing championships.
You guys are going to have to.
Now we're going to have to start.
New York's going to have to pass matching resolutions to keep up with the Dodgers for getting robbed out of championships.
Too funny. Too funny. But I'll say it's just the Red Sox world history. Now let's get real quick. Let's get to Pedroia. Dustin Pedroia, I think if you're a Red Sox fan, you love Dustin Pedroia. He's been the heart and soul of most of these championships, I believe. I mean, this is the guy. And I remember when he was a rookie. I remember when he came up as a rookie and he made an impact quickly. They weren't great his rookie. They brought him up late. And I remember he just bombed the Yankees one year. It was early in his career. But really, the heart and soul, he was like the original dirt dog, right, in Boston.
For sure.
You know, and now he's been trying to come back, but had another situation where I think he had a relapse with the knee issue, and now there's some real question marks. You know, when it comes to Dustin Brodor, it's probably the end of the line for him in Boston, correct? Probably his career.
He's played 9 games in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
That's not promising.
It's tough.
And like a guy that took some punishment in the, I mean, he, what was it, 11 years before that or 12 years before that? So the smaller, like wear and tear, like he played hard. Like, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Not surprised at all.
So is it time to part ways?
Well, I mean, I don't know if part way, I mean, I think it's time.
He still gets paid, doesn't he?
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, I think it's time for him to make a decision on whether he wants to play anymore.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, if you're the Red Sox, I mean, I think he's still under contract. You're not just going to release him, I don't think. You know, but I think in terms of it's just time for him to look at himself in the mirror and say, I got a family, and you know, I want to be able to walk the rest of my life, and you know, so that might be the end for him. I don't know.
He got 3 rings. He was crucial to 2 of them.
Oh yeah.
From you know 07 to basically 2016, he was the heart of the team.
Brian from Fairfax, just Texas. But why did JBJ struggle in both 2008 and 2019? Well, because he's not that good.
That's a different issue.
That's a completely different. I mean, look, if I know a pitch is coming, I'm not going to be able to hit it. You know what I mean? Like, he's just not as good as these other guys. When you look at elite players like JD Martinez, Bogarts, and Betts, I mean, come on.
I don't think they were cheating, but JBJ has always been streaky, and his ceiling has always been lower than his floor is high.
Great defensive player, though.
Well, yeah,
that's why he gets paid.
Yeah, I mean, great defensive player and a cannon for an arm. Listen, I don't know the reasoning, but it's interesting. You know, it's so funny creating this segment this morning. I'm thinking, okay, my thought process going into this segment is completely different after you said that, Aaron, a second ago about are they waiting, and then getting that text from Mike telling me, hey. You know, they all had career years in 2018, and then watching what they did last year. I mean, with everything going on, if it looks like a fish and smells like a fish, you know, usually it's a fish.
I'm just thinking of the JBJ's ceiling is lower than his floor is high. Where does he live? There's no room to live in there.
Exactly.
He's got some ups, though. He can jump. That kid can jump.
If the ceiling is the floor, where are you sleeping?
Well, no, I mean, like, his... If he's playing at his floor level, that's a lot lower than when he's playing at his ceiling, that being higher than above the average. So, like,
the ceiling is really far from the floor.
His ceiling is closer to his average than his floor is. His floor is really low. Okay. His floor is really low. That's what I'm trying to say.
I am very confused right now. JBJ
is really bad.
I don't think you're a very good architect. I'm just going to say that.
His bad
I'm
is
not
super
living
bad.
In your house.
So, next question. Next week, do they have a manager next week? By the time we're on the air next week, they have a manager?
Hope so.
I mean,
I think first week of February.
Okay.
Because, like I said earlier in the segment, what's the rush? Pitchers and catchers is like sometime around Valentine's
Day. There's a huge rush to get him in.
Not to me.
Really?
What baseball are we coaching right now?
It's not just about baseball. Your coach, it's just getting the guy in, get him comfortable, get him to know the play. I mean, there's so much. It's a Boston Red Sox. We're not talking about like you know a little league team or a junior Babe Ruth team. This is the Boston Red Sox. You're gonna have a manager a week before they report for pitchers and catchers.
I'm somehow unfazed.
So then, does that mean that it's either Renicky or someone that's very experienced and who can transition easily?
Talk about a yawn if it's Renicky. I mean, seriously. I mean,
except if it is, then that. That kind of implicates the Red Sox, because that means that that's what they were waiting for.
It may be. But at the end of the day, I think it's got to be Varitek. I mean, if I'm a Red Sox fan, I want Jason Varitek at the helm, especially with where we are today with the Boston Red Sox. I mean, he is the guy, right? I mean, he is the face of what the Red Sox were back when they were, you know, they've been winning lately with that first little run.
He was the thighs of that run.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll tell you one thing. He didn't take his mask off when he fought A-Rod. Everyone gets mad because they think they beat up Alex Rodriguez. Like, take your mask off if you're going to start a fight with Alex Rodriguez. Don't be wearing that mask and throwing your glove in his face. You didn't beat up A-Rod. You got all this equipment.
Rodriguez picked a fight with a tree.
He picked a fight with Rodriguez. And here he was, A-Rod, standing up to him. But what did Varitek do? Mask on, glove in face. Come on.
If I had a mask, I'd keep it on.
Yeah. Well, I won't go anywhere there. We'll be right back.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
Man, I remember when this song first came out, I'd be cruising down the street, windows down, singing it from the top of my lungs. You know what I mean?
You have hair then?
Oh, yeah. Good. I had a good crop back in those days. A good one. A little gel in it. Put my finger, you know. Good. I like that's, you. You have good hair.
That's why I don't use gel.
Stop looking at my head, please. Stop looking at it. You're making me uncomfortable.
That's why I don't use anything in my hair, because I have this like irrational fear that like it will affect the health of the hair. And
okay, shut up. I don't want to talk about this anymore. I'm hurt by it.
Sorry.
You have a good crop, though. Both of you guys have great hair. Great hair.
My hair has a higher chance of surviving a nuclear blast than I do.
It is nice, thick. It's good. Good for you. You guys are very
good. A little fist bump for the hair boys.
And I'll be over here looking like me. All right, go ahead. What do we got today?
This is Hot or Not, which is brought to you by Superb Cupcakes. They're over in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston. Head over there for the best cupcakes around. They will not disappoint, offering over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes made from scratch daily. They're going to have Super Bowl-themed cupcakes on February 1st in celebration of the big game, which will be available from 11 to 6 or until they sell out, so hurry in. I'm excited to find out what they come up with.
Oh, and we were talking, actually, I was over there the other day and we were talking about that. And I'm not going to tell you anything, but you got to get these cupcakes. And they got the helmets for them, you know. You got the cool helmets.
You get like a little souvenir.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Awesome.
Yeah, not only get a great cupcake, get a nice souvenir. And I won't, and I'll tell you a little secret. They're rings. So you wear it. You can wear your favorite. You can wear it around your finger. Yeah.
Yeah. I do get a Niners cupcake.
Check it out. I hope I'm not letting the cat out of the bag over there with Superb Cupcakes, but do yourself a favor. Go get some cupcakes.
That was a good tease, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
All right. So Danny Cannell had something interesting to say about the current Brady situation. I'm just going to play it for you and then we'll talk about it.
If you go somewhere else and you're Tom Brady and it's a totally new cast, it's a totally new locker room environment, because I think Brady fits Belichick perfectly. It's this perfect marriage. And I think it's one of the reasons Belichick has been able to keep up this high intensity, high pressure, high expectation. It's our way or the highway. It's the Patriot way. You can go somewhere else. I don't know in today's player. Now, there will be an instant respect for Brady in the locker room, but that stuff gets old. I mean, how many players have we seen leave the Patriots say, that wasn't a lot of fun? And it is great to win, but on some players, it rubs them the wrong way, and they can't do it. I don't know if that travels as well as Tom Brady may think it does.
So basically, it will be hard for Brady to go somewhere else, which then I translated to Brady needs the Patriots more than they need him.
What do you got, Aaron? What do you got, Austin?
I don't like the way you phrased it. For the actual question, but I'm hot on it. I think it's sort of along the lines of old dog, new tricks. I don't think it'll be as easy. You'd have to get everything line up perfectly for him to have a really good, like better than what he would do at the Patriots year or two.
I'm so not hot on this. I think it's Tom Brady. He is arguably the greatest quarterback ever to live. And we saw Joe Montana leave San Francisco and go to Kansas City and be elite. I don't think Tom Brady's going to go to a situation that is not comfortable for Tom Brady. So you're not going to see Tom Brady quarterbacking a team that can't win. But I'm going to tell you right now, if Tom Brady wants to go play in any organization, he's going to make them better immediately. Simple as that, just by the leadership alone. And the reason they used to leave the Patriots was because the Patriots were all about winning. And you know what? If you don't want to win, they don't want you. And that's what's made them so successful all these years.
I go back to, he would not say yes to anything where he wasn't comfortable, but you don't know what you don't know in those scenarios too. You don't know how with a locker room with 53 other variables in there for players, how they will react. And
if Dan Patrick walked into the Burlington Free Press sports room and said, I'm going to work with you guys now, would you? You wouldn't be, you know, be like, oh my God, this isn't going to be amazing.
That's a little different. I've listened to Dan Patrick hardcore for a decade and then watched him for two decades before that. I'd know what I was like getting into better than like just touring a facility and having a passing knowledge of the guys in an organization.
You know him the way everybody else knows Tom Brady that hasn't played with him. You watch and you've seen. So you don't know what he does.
He means the other way.
The other way.
No, like, but no, I know what you're saying.
I don't think that like guys getting paid millions of dollars are going to like suddenly cow to this one guy.
If you're going to an organization that's close to winning and you're bringing a guy like Tom Brady in that can galvanize that and kind of help you get down that road, you don't think that you wouldn't be a sponge to that to win the championship?
I think culture shock is a real thing. I really do.
What's really tough, I think, is that it would be really hard for Brady to transition. I think that's pretty obvious. Going to a new system after spending 20 years playing one way is tough. But imagine the transition for the Patriots. They've been able to, for 20 years, throw whatever on their quarterback's plate, and he can just roll with it. And he's like an encyclopedia of football. and then to transition from that to a new quarterback who's not going to have that capacity, because only one player in the history of the sport has had that capacity. That I think that would be really hard for the coaching staff and for the players around them to not have that capacity.
I know we have a lot more questions to get to, but I just think it's hard to say that Tom Brady needs anything in terms of what he's done, who he is, and what he represents. Whether he needs the Patriots more or the Patriots need him more is irrelevant to me. It's Tom Brady. And if there's an organization out there that needs a quarterback to take him to the next level, to teach them how to win, there's not a greater winner in the world than Tom Brady in the NFL. There just isn't. So that's just my opinion.
There should be voter transparency for the Hall of Fame voting.
Yeah, hot. I mean, I think if you're going to own some lanes, I think we should know who you are and we should know why you made that decision. I really do. I mean, I think there comes a point in time where whatever the reasoning is back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and 80s for not giving these guys 100% of the vote, Austin and Aaron, I think when you do make a decision like this on a player like Jeter, I mean, there are some players out there you can kind of see, okay, you know, maybe they, you know, who knows what the reasoning is. But for guys like Derek Jeter, and we'll use him as an example, didn't get one. Ken Griffey Jr., another one that missed by three. Like, you should have to explain, like, hey, listen, this is why. And then let us know. Maybe you're right. Maybe what you're saying is correct and we're all wrong. But at least tell us why you're making this decision.
Yeah, and like when you, even to a degree, when you have guys with Heisman votes, you can come out afterward and like you're encouraged to talk about it afterward. I'm right there with you.
And we'd benefit greatly, because imagine someone having to having a soundbite of someone trying to justify not putting Babe Ruth in the Hall of Fame.
Tell us why. I mean, just tell us why. Like, I'd like to know this guy's reasoning. That's all you have to do. And maybe I'm wrong. Like, you know, a second ago we had a segment on the Red Sox, and I changed my mind in 10 seconds. Like, tell me why you wouldn't put him on the ballot to be in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. Just tell me.
All right. Jason Garrett was a perfect fit for the Giants.
Oh, I mean, hot all day on this. And I don't know why. I mean, I get why Jason Garrett, he seems to be the punching bag in Dallas, and I get that maybe he's not the greatest head coach, but people forget what he did in Dallas as an offensive coordinator.
You can eliminate maybe from greatest head coach.
Okay, well, whatever. Okay, I mean, he isn't a great head coach. Fair enough. There's a lot of great coordinators that aren't great head coaches. But I think this is a perfect fit for a young quarterback, a young football team. I think it's perfect. I think from what I've seen out of him, his demeanor is perfect. I think he's a brilliant offensive coordinator. What he did with Dallas, remember, he was an offensive coordinator there first, and they were an elite offense with him there. That's why he got the head coaching job. So I think it's a perfect fit. We'll see how it plays out, and nobody has a crystal ball, but I was psyched to see that he is now a part of the Giant coaching staff.
Aaron, do you have an idea how much of the play calling he did when he was the head coach?
I don't. I do know that their offensive coordinator, once he became head coach for a while, I think it's Larrañaga or something like that, he got thrashed too because his decision making was poor. So,
I think the kid this year is making the call. The kid that played at Baylor was with the offensive coordinator this year.
It wasn't Jason Garrett.
No, Jason Garrett wasn't making the play calls this year. It was that young kid that played at Baylor.
But like the hallmark of his teams was they never really knew when to do the right thing, even just on offense. Not like, I'm not talking clock management, special teams, any of that stuff. It's, wow, we probably should have run the football there a lot and we didn't. Or, wow, we were running the football, meanwhile the other team was catching up because we weren't getting first. Like, there was a lot of dissonance there. So I'm totally on board with guys that like just can't hack it as head coaches, and I think he's probably one of them. I think perfect is too strong a word, so I'm not going to be hot on this as a perfect fit.
I think the biggest knock on him as a head coach is his lack of leadership. I think it will suit him well to switch back to an offensive coordinator. I think if this was a head coaching question, I would have been laughing this off the table.
And can I add that the Dallas Cowboys are not run by their head coach anyway. They're run by their owner.
Yeah,
and you have no idea what Jerry was telling him in the background before these games or with decisions that were being made. Right. There were many times during his career that Jones was on the sideline. So I think you got to give the Giants the benefit of the doubt here. And I think you got to give this guy an opportunity to get with Daniel Jones. And look what I believe that he was Tony Romo's coordinator, I believe. And we saw what Tony Romo developed into. So, again, a disciple of Bill Parcells, because Parcells was the head coach there when Garrett was the OC.
Last thing I'll say here, he's not the head coach in New York, and that's a good thing. I'm hesitant to say it's a great fit because I don't know what sort of baggage he comes in with his track record as a head coach recently, if the guys will listen as well or if he can be as effective as people think he can. That's it.
That's fair.
So we'll have to see then. The Patrick Mahomes hype has gone way too far. I actually have a beautiful piece of audio made here by our boy Danny, intern Danny. This is some of the stuff that's been said about Mahomes in the last couple years.
Patrick Mahomes is just an alien. He does all the right things, too. He has the moxie where he's willing and ready to get the crowd into it. He can drop it into a bucket. He can make every throw.
I expect the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes to be excellent for many years to come.
He is the best player at any sport in the world right now.
This guy has the ultimate talent. He also understands the game so well, and he's willing to put himself in position to be great.
Patrick Mahomes is the biggest star, the most exciting athlete, and perhaps the most valuable player in all of sports.
Trying to go toe-to-toe against Patrick Mahomes.
The common denominator in all of their success is Patrick Mahomes. I've never seen anyone be as good as he is close up besides Aaron Rodgers.
That's the Patrick Mahomes difference right there, and that's just a truth. That's a certainty.
I mean, this dude is something else. As a talent, I've never seen anything quite like it.
Patty Mahomes has everything you could possibly need to be the greatest quarterback of all time.
So we're all in agreement that's hot, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to agree. I think it's not. I mean, I think he's... I mean, go ahead. If you want to take it first, but I disagree.
I'm going to say the hype has gone way too far. I'm hot on this. Like, I don't think you can say he's not... Like, he's great. Those sound bites are such flagrant hyperbole. It's awful. Like, it's a couple of those, I just had to laugh. Like, I looked at Aaron and I just laughed because, like, okay, it's his second year as a starter. He's incredible. I'm going to, like, my favorite comparison is he's a more mobile, explosive Brett Favre. The way he makes plays and does stuff, it's fantastic to watch, but long way to go before he's, like, actually the best thing ever.
You just compared him to a more mobile Brett Favre. You don't think that's an unbelievable comparison?
It's year two.
I mean, that would be your soundbite could be in that montage. I think what you've seen out of Pat Mahomes, he's carried that football team on his back. And I think in today's media, in 24-hour coverage, everyone's talking about him. My guess is that with the people that when you're talking about him, you know, that it's at the moment after a game or whatever. I think he's great for the NFL. I love the way he plays, and I love who he is. I mean, when you see who Pat Mahomes is and you read about him, he's a great human being. I don't watch enough sports throughout the week in terms of like SportsCenter, and I'm not reading, I'm not on the NFL Network all day to hear it, but to me, I think he's an elite quarterback, and he's really an exciting, he's one of the big reasons I can't wait to watch the Super Bowl.
I agree, he is great, but that's like media hype tornado stuff. That is not good for anybody.
He has everything you need to be the greatest quarterback of all time. He's the most valuable player in all of sports right now. Stuff like that, I think, is probably too far, given that he's only been a starter for 2 years.
So if you're calling him the greatest of all time, fine, you've gone too far. If you think he's the greatest thing that's ever happened in the NFL, fine, you've gone too far. But look at this kid's talent base and what you've seen so far. There is nothing wrong with hyping this kid up.
You don't know where the limit is, but pump the brakes.
And let me say this. A Kansas City-San Francisco Super Bowl needs Pat Mahomes. For ratings. I just think it does. For ratings. So excuse the hype because they need Pat Mahomes to be special for the Super Bowl to be exciting for people that aren't that excited.
If this was an Alex Smith Kansas City Chiefs team, this would be a bloodbath very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You want to fit one more in real quick, or we have enough time?
We got to get out of the second.
All right, that's hot or not. Good job. We had a bunch more. That's what happens. We start talking. We don't stop. We're going to tie a bow on the show. Don't go anywhere.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Head coach John Becker and coach, a very tight first half. You grabbed the lead right at the end, but had a bit of a slow start. How do you rate your performance so far?
4.
What adjustments do you need to make in the second half tonight?
Play harder and tougher.
And you shot only 40% from inside the arc tonight. Who needs to step up offensively for you in the second half?
Our best players.
Thank you, coach. Best of luck in the second half tonight.
Thank you.
That was John Becker at halftime of the main game the other day. I have to say, we don't have a lot of time. I love it. It sent a message to his team and the fan base that John Becker had enough. You never see John Becker speak that way to a reporter or anything. You can tell that John Becker's frustrated with his team, and I think that's going to translate to them being a lot more successful going forward.
I don't want to know what he said to his team because he definitely saved some words in that interview.
He did.
He answered three questions with eight words, which is just remarkable word economy.
I loved it.
And it was cringeworthy to watch, but it worked because they did pull it out.
They did.
I'm Mike Zahn. I agree so much with you. I think you can't keep pretending this Vermont team is meeting the expectations. They have to do better. You can't let that main team be in the game till the end.
Well, the point being is that John Becker, you can tell, has a high expectation of his guys. And these guys were brought in here to be successful. You got the best player in the league, and you've got a lot of really good role players. Now, we can argue like what's going on with them, but I thought what I saw as a fan sitting back and watching it, I love seeing your coach stand up and say, you know what, I'm mad, and I'm sending a message right now, and hopefully things change. I think it'll help this team in the long run.
Yep, and the long run starts tonight with Lowell at 7 at Patrick Gym.
That's right, and coverage starts right here on 101.3 The Game at 6:30. And let me just say, man, let's get rolling because we need them to have the home court for that tournament so we can do the show live from the American East Championship.
I know, that'd be a blast.
I mean, that's why I'm getting salty, you know what I mean?
It's so fun to do that broadcast. We've done it the last 2 years. It's great.
All right, the Green City Garage poll question today. Green City Garage located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5, 802-651-9299. Go see my buddy Chris Wallace. Have him take care of your car. He does a great job. The poll question today was, would robot umpires be good for Major League Baseball? You could have gone to 101.3 The Game at Twitter to answer the question. Aaron, what is it now?
76% say no.
Yeah, right. No good. Don't do it. Get it out. Don't even try it. I don't want to even see it.
I think it's worth trying it in minor leagues.
No, it's not worth it. Don't do it. Listen, you ever see Terminator? I told you this. I mean, this is how Arnold Schwarzenegger starts wiping the human race out.
It's too late for that, Jeff. It's too late.
I mean, that's how this all starts.
Jeff's worried about the rise of the machines.
We're already there.
Listen, I'm just telling you. I mean, this is how it started. Don't you remember the one where he comes back? Remember, and they go back to the future, and then they have to go take, they don't, they got to, yeah, I got it. They have to take care of the robot arm or whatever, and they go back, and there's just the one robot arm that starts it all. That's what he's doing with this Major League Baseball umpiring thing. I'm just saying. All right.
I've never seen T2.
Well, you should see it. It's very good. All right, guys, this is Sports Saturday. We're here every Saturday from 10 to noon. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. The roads are going to be a little bit slippery.